the people that say the problem with renewables is they're expensive and they need some government subsidies to kick the industry off are the same people that say, so that's why we should go nuclear, which, sure, it's expensive, but if only the government would kick things off, everything would turn out to be all right in the long run.
The role of nuclear is good. I mean, it's the only source of power that makes coal look cheap.
One for mum, one for dad, one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be in Australia.
Dead, buried, cremated.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute. As 2018 draws to a close, Australia's climate and energy policy remains almost entirely unresolved. While the government under Scott Morrison has a minister for bringing down electricity prices, it really has no clear plans to reduce emissions, and it has flagged plans to underwrite new coal-fired power. Meanwhile, opposition leader Bill Shorten has announced Labor's $15 billion energy package, with a whole suite of measures aimed at boosting renewable energy, cutting greenhouse gas pollution, and reducing electricity prices.
Today I've outlined Labor's plans to directly underwrite and invest in cleaner, cheaper power to help achieve 50% renewables by 2030.
In this episode of Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's Chief Economist Richard Dennis and Senior Economist Matt Grudnoff join me to discuss some of the details of Labor's plan, some of the big issues facing the national electricity grid, and where we need to go from here.
Yeah, there are a few problems in the system, and what Labor have really announced are ways to get around that. So as we transform our electricity system from an old coal-fired wheel and spoke system to a renewable energy system, we need to basically change the grid. We need to change the way we deliver electricity. So the Labor Party have announced $5 billion fund for energy security to upgrade the grid. They've announced money for investment in clean energy generation. They've announced $200 million for battery storage. So basically they're trying to transform our old grid into a new modern one.
Oh, look, it's a great grid if you were living in the 1960s and you hadn't heard of climate change and you thought that the state government should be big in coal mining and big in power stations. This is exactly the grid you'd build. But if it was 2018 and you were worried about climate change and you had any interest in not just lowering the prices of electricity, but actually making the whole system more stable, then, you know, we really have to go back to square one. The challenge is we can't shut things down and start from scratch. So we have to build the electricity grid we want while we're using the one we've got. Mm. And what Labor's really announced is quite a big modernisation, not just of how we generate electricity. We talk a lot about wind and solar, but now we're talking about new ways to distribute that energy around the states and around the country and store that energy, because obviously renewables generate more energy at some times of day and release it at other times of day. That's not a fundamental problem with renewables, but the grid that we built in the 1960s wasn't built with that in mind. So, yeah, we're gradually moving towards an electricity generation and distribution system of the 21st century. The challenge is building that one while we're finishing off the one that we started building 50 years ago.
And the problem is that our coal-fired power plants, a lot of them are coming to the end of their life, and some of them are even past that. They're old, they're clunkers, they need to be replaced. So what
they break down all the time.
They do. They break down. As our gas and coal watch has shown, they break down regularly. And so what we need to think about is, well, what do we replace them with? Do we replace them with other coal-fired power plants? Do we replace them with renewable energy? What's the best way to do it? And what AEMO, the people who actually run the grid, they did a study to say, well, you know, what is the best way to replace these generators? And what they came back with was that by 2030, the cheapest way to generate electricity would be to have 47% of electricity generated by renewables. That includes AEMO saying that they will be able to maintain their reliability standard, which is currently that they will supply 99.998% of annual demand. So their reliability standard is very, very high. They think that renewables are the way we're going to produce electricity in the cheapest way. So basically the people who run the grid think the best way forward is to expand renewables.
So let me get this right. The people who run the grid think renewables are good. The private companies that generate electricity want to invest in renewables, and the free marketeers in the Liberal Party want to tell them they're all wrong and suggest we need coal-fired power stations.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating thing from an economist's point of view to watch the Liberal Party's approach over decades to climate change. They have abandoned all the free market principles. They think that carbon pricing, which is the market way of reducing emissions, is the worst possible way. And they seem to be backing things like subsidies to coal-fired power and basically stuff that you wouldn't expect the Liberal Party to approach at all.
It's as if they don't really have a plan to tackle climate change.
It's almost as if they're just delaying.
Oh, yeah. Indeed. Look, it's hilarious. I mean, yeah, the people that say the problem with renewables is they're expensive and they need some government subsidies to kick the industry off are the same people that say, so that's why we should go nuclear, which, sure, it's expensive, but if only the government would kick things off, everything would turn out to be all right in the long run.
The role of nuclear is good. I mean, it's the only source of power that makes coal look cheap.
We should be an energy superpower. That's what Australia should be.
Solar and wind can't survive without significant taxpayer subsidies.
It's about time we had the renewables revolution.
I don't accept that renewables are at the moment cheaper than coal. It's not.
We need to bring in the transition to renewable energy. That's the sort of vision that most of the country is screaming out for.
More renewables equals more jobs.
Labor's plan includes a target to cut greenhouse gas emissions by 45% by 2030, which is well beyond the 26% target Australia pledged at the Paris climate talks, and that the coalition still wants to stick to, even though it doesn't really have many policies to get us there. Labor also wants a 50% renewable energy target by 2030 and plans to meet this by subsidising rooftop solar and installing batteries in 100,000 households across Australia.
Look, I mean, the reality is that even if climate change didn't exist, we would still have to update our electricity sector. And the reason is because our coal-fired power plants are coming to the end of their life.
And I think Liddell predates colour television.
That's correct.
They got what now?
Coal-fired power plants were designed to last about 30, 35 years. We have coal-fired power plants that are approaching 50 years of age. And they're old, they're clunkers, and they need to be shut down. And basically, like an old car, they're becoming very inefficient, they're breaking down regularly, they cost a lot of money to maintain. And so the question from an economist's point of view is what's the cheapest way to produce electricity into the future? And that's why we need to invest in renewables. So this idea that, oh, investing in renewables is going to cost a whole lot of money, well, that might be true, but regardless of whether we wanted to go down the renewable path or we wanted to stick with coal, we would have to invest a whole lot of money simply because the power plants are coming to the end of their life.
So much of what we hear about the cost of renewables, yeah, is this one-off investment in a bit of infrastructure that's going to give us nearly free electricity for 30 or 40 years to come. So it's a rhetorical trick to talk about the cost of building new renewables. There's a cost to building coal-fired power stations, there's a cost to building renewables, there's a cost to installing some energy efficiency measures. The question is, of all the ways to meet our energy needs in the coming decades, what makes the most sense now? And yeah, most economists looking at it are saying it's renewables. AEMO were asked to look at it, they said it's renewables. And of course, when Tony Abbott commissioned an inquiry into getting rid of the renewable energy target, Tony Abbott's own review, chaired by a climate skeptic, actually the modelling in that said renewable energy pushed electricity prices down. It's the economics isn't controversial, it's the politics.
From the outset, Labor's plan is different to the coalition's, but Bill Shorten did promise to revise a Turnbull-era policy, the National Energy Guarantee.
The National Energy Guarantee is not the scheme that we would have designed. We've never said it was perfect. But we have always recognised the value of a market-based mechanism where the basic framework is supported by both sides of the parliament. This helps provide certainty and confidence for investors, for construction, for new generation projects to finally move ahead.
The government dumped the NEG over internal divisions, divisions which ultimately led to the demise of yet another Australian Prime Minister in Malcolm Turnbull. Labor's climate policy has been criticised by green groups for not going far enough, and Matt and Richard agree, but they are pragmatic after 20 years of being worn down by climate policy paralysis.
I think we'll have something like a national energy guarantee at some point, but look, unfortunately, like the issues of same-sex marriage and like safe schools, unfortunately, some in our parliaments have decided to make climate change a totemic symbolic issue, and having the fight about it is kind of more important to them than resolving the fight. So I think it's clever of Labor to take the architecture, I think it was the fourth iteration of Liberal climate policy.
Hard to keep track.
At least they're innovative in the policy development. I think it's clever of Labor to say, well, here's some architecture that the Liberals created. At one point, the Liberals thought was workable. We'll make that the foundation of what we're proposing to do. We'll wait for the Liberals to vote for that. And in the meantime, here's some other specific things we'll be getting on and doing. So I think that it's not just good politics, but it's good economics to keep a national scheme on the agenda. But I think it's good politics and good climate policy to actually get on and do things. Sitting around waiting for bipartisanship, well, it's been 20 years now. It's great to see the government coming to terms with the consequences of playing politics with this for so long. And it's great to see the opposition being pragmatic, saying, yeah, there's an optimal way forward, but we'll be taking whatever steps are available.
Yeah, look, I mean, as an economist, we like to obsess about what's the most efficient way of doing things. And in this particular case, the NEG might not be the absolute most efficient way of doing things, but it seems to be the thing that will get through Parliament. And politics is the problem with climate policy, not economics and engineering. And, you know, if this is something that's going to move us forward, then it's something we should support.
And also, like, again, economists love to talk about optimal policy, the most efficient design for our energy markets, and that's all great. But anyone that's looked at a city at 8 o'clock in the morning knows there's nothing efficient about our transport system. Anyone that's ever gone to a waste dump knows there's nothing efficient about our consumption choices. And in fact, anyone that's ever gone to a buffet knows that there's nothing efficient about the way people serve themselves food. So, yeah, it's great to talk about what the optimal energy system might look like. But to be clear, that's not how we invented our transport system. Bunch of economists telling us what's optimal. How could anyone driving 2 tonnes of steel to work in the morning be considered efficient or optimal?
All at the same time.
All at the same time. So my point is, you know, yes, I think economists have something to add to the debate about better and worse, but the idea that tackling climate change, the biggest and most important global challenge we face, the idea that that should be the first time in the history of democracy that we get it perfect,
or that we should
seems
wait.
Like a high bar.
Or that we should wait for the most efficient outcome before we do anything.
Yeah, we wouldn't have built the NBN if that were the case.
Well, I mean, power prices are a very real concern to every Australian. And
we're going to stop the price gouging. We're going to force them to put more fair income, reliable energy, power into the system.
So yeah. Is fair income power code for coal-fired power?
No, it is code. It's no code. It's dispatchable power. It's power when customers demand it, and we've got to get that balance right. This is really critical. There's been challenges in South Australia.
After the Coalition dumped its only climate policy, its remaining plan is to tackle the problem of electricity bills. Labor too promised to cut electricity bills by investing in new infrastructure and overhauling the electricity grid using the Clean Energy Finance Corporation.
To build the national energy infrastructure of the future, the pipelines, the pumped hydro, the interconnectors and the storage.
Well, one of the problems that some large solar projects, for example, and wind projects are having at the moment is that where they're best placed, so where the wind resource is best or the solar resource is best, is not necessarily where the grid goes in a large way. And so what this package is designed to do is to put poles and wires, big transmission lines, I should say, in the places that that have good wind resources and good solar resources.
So Labor's announced that it mapped out what AEMO, that body that we were talking about before, the people who actually run the grid, described in their integrated systems plan. And so part of that is upgrading interconnectors and building new ones. And things like Tasmania has a plan to be the mainland's battery. How does that work, Matt?
Tasmania has great hydro electricity capacity, and the advantage of hydro is it's a renewable energy that can be switched on and off very quickly. So it can be turned on when we have high demand and we have a lack of supply. The problem is Tasmania isn't well connected to the rest of the grid. It has one interconnector at the moment, that the plan is to put a second interconnector in, and then Tasmania can expand its renewable energy and basically provide this on-demand power to the rest of the grid.
And Richard, Bill Shorten also talked about that Australia's like pretty woeful, as you were talking about earlier, when it comes to energy efficiency and being wasteful. So part of what they've announced tackles that idea of finding, well, places where we're wasting energy. Why is that good economically?
Look, economics is allegedly about the efficient allocation of scarce resources. Economics is supposed to be about efficiency. Yet the Australian electricity system, like so much of the Australian economy, is actually based on waste. We all know in the lead up to Christmas, the more money we spend buying gifts that we know our family don't want, and the quicker they chuck them in the bin, the faster the economy grows. So we actually tell ourselves that waste creates wealth. And that's true with the energy system as well. So if we leave our lights on, if we don't bother insulating our homes, or if we heat up half a ton of water next to our house every night to a temperature that's too hot to have a shower in, then hop into the shower, turn the hot tap on and add some cold to it. If we want to waste millions and millions of tons of coal doing that, well, that's great for the people that sell coal. But from an economic point of view, wouldn't it make more sense to use energy more efficiently rather than have capital and labour spent digging up more coal than we need, have those people go and do something else we actually need?
Like install batteries. That was another element of the plan to incentivise households to be able to purchase battery to go with their solar PV. What is the role of batteries for people who don't know? What do they do?
Look, batteries literally store energy for us, and we can store energy in batteries in our home. We can store them in enormous batteries like they've built in South Australia, the big Tesla battery. Or you could store energy in all sorts of ways. The most common or the biggest one in Australia is gravity, pump water up a hill. If you've got spare electricity, you run water up a hill, and then when you need some electricity back, you let the water run down the hill. It's very old technology. It's been working for a long time. And if we want to store renewable energy like that, then it means that we can generate energy whenever the wind is blowing and the sun is shining. We store the energy in all sorts of ways, in all sorts of places. And then when people need the energy, we literally turn the batteries on. And this happens every summer on every very hot day. The Snowy Hydro scheme, they literally open the floodgates. Water floods down the dam, and as it does, gravity spins a turbine and we make electricity. So the Snowy Hydro is an enormous battery. What we're now talking about is putting more batteries like that in terms of water, but chemical batteries and electrical batteries all around the country, and they'll be there to give us power whenever we need it, which is quite different from is the sun shining right now.
And the other thing that's important is that battery prices are falling, that they're coming down in price. And one of the ways you decrease the price of something is through what economists call the economies of scale. And that basically means as you ramp up production of something, it actually becomes cheaper to produce things per unit. And so by encouraging people to install batteries if they have a solar system in the house, we effectively create a market for it and we reduce the overall cost of it over time.
And to drive an acceleration to world's best technology, to future technology and how...
There are a lot of commentators who like to scare people about the reliability of Australia's electricity grid. But a lot of those same commentators tend to confuse reliability with predictability, and they are two very different things.
Renewable energy is intermittent, but that doesn't mean the same as unreliable. Weather forecasting in particular has become quite good, so that 24 hours before, the prediction of how much wind you might get from a wind farm or how much solar energy you might get from a solar farm is actually very, very accurate. So while we know that wind and solar can go up and down, we can actually predict ahead of time how much it's going to go up and down. And that's really important when it comes to a grid. So in a grid, you want to know when you're going to have power so you can decide what kind of power to dispatch. The problem with coal and gas is that when they break down suddenly. You don't know ahead of time when a coal-fired plant is going to break down. Sure, they do turn off for maintenance and they can schedule that and we know in advance when it's going to be off. But quite often, coal-fired power plants, particularly because they're old, will break down suddenly. And this actually causes more problems in the grid than an intermittent renewable energy.
Well, it's better than that. They break down, or they're more likely to break down on the hottest days at the hottest time of the day when we need them the most because they're so old they don't cope with the heat very well.
Yeah, when everybody's turning their air conditioners on, that's when a coal-fired power plant is more likely to break down.
Yeah, that base load can be a bastard.
Yeah.
The Gorgon Project's natural gas supply undergoes culminating in the largest subsea gathering system in Australia's history.
High gas prices are disastrous. They are still putting pressure on local manufacturers, with some still being quoted up to $12 per gigajoule.
Coal, gas, hydro, as long as you're encouraging and incenting that to stay in the system or more of it to come into the system, you're going to have more affordable, more reliable power. So I don't need any economic modelling to tell me that.
It's not just electricity prices that have been going up. The cost of gas, which many people use for cooking, heating and their hot water, has also been increasing. Labor wants to tackle this issue by setting up a permanent gas export control trigger, new powers for the ACCC to crack down on anti-competitive behaviour that inflates gas prices, a national interest test for all new gas projects, and a domestic gas review board to oversee all these new measures.
For all of the talk about how a carbon price would make it impossible for Australian manufacturers to be competitive, all of the politicians and all of the industry groups that raged about the carbon price...
Whyalla being wiped out.
Whyalla being wiped out, steel industry uncompetitive. They were all silent about the fact that when Australia connected its gas market to the world market, then the Australian price of gas would go through the roof. This was not only inevitable, it was stated publicly by the gas industry themselves.
It was the point.
It was the point.
They wanted to connect so they could get a higher price.
So historically, Australia had a lot of gas supply relative to how much we consumed here, the demand. But we didn't have enough gas to justify spending billions of dollars on the export infrastructure required to liquefy it and put it on a boat. So basically all the gas in Australia was kind of trapped here. There was lots of gas. There weren't many people that wanted gas. And our manufacturers and our houses had access to very cheap gas. But then some geniuses had an idea about building not just one, but three enormous new gas export facilities at the same time in the same place in Gladstone in Queensland. And ever since that decision, the fact that Australian gas prices was going to go up was inevitable and predictable. Mm. And as Matt said, it was the plan. But all of the people that said carbon taxes would kill our competitiveness were silent about the fact that gas exports would have a much bigger impact on manufacturing costs. So to be clear, gas prices have gone up a lot. That was the point. that was the plan, it was the mission, it actually cost more than $10 billion in infrastructure to build the export facilities that made gas this expensive. So for people to now run around saying they're worried about the impact of policy on energy prices is absurd. Letting us join the East Coast gas market to the world market was a disaster for anyone that wanted Australians to have access to cheap energy.
And to be clear, gas prices actually play a really important part in electricity prices. Gas prices are one of the major reasons that we've seen such a big increase in electricity prices. That, along with retail margins, that is basically energy companies being able to set whatever price they like, these two factors have been what's pushing up electricity prices. So it hasn't been renewables. In fact, study after study have shown that renewables are actually putting downward pressure on electricity prices. It's actually that gas prices went up, and so therefore a lot of gas-fired electricity also went up in price, and this has pushed the price of electricity up.
Thousands of school students have staged protests around the country demanding greater political action on climate change.
Stop Adani! Stop Adani! Stop Adani! Stop!
We want to keep pumping carbon into our atmosphere, keep burning coal, and keep pretending climate change is not an issue!
A week after Labor announced its plan, thousands and thousands of school children around Australia walked out of school to protest against the government's inaction on climate change. The school strike for climate action was criticised by the Prime Minister, who said the students should spend more time in school learning than protesting.
Well, I'll tell you what we're also committed to. Kids should go to school. That's what we're committed to. What we want is more learning in schools and less activism in schools.
And Matt Canavan, who you might remember is also a pretty big fan of coal, basically told the kids to get a job.
You know, the best thing you learn about going for a protest is how to join the dole queue.
So will Labor's plan address these school kids' concerns, and does it measure up when it comes to addressing the issue of climate change?
Tackling climate change is an enormous deal. There's no bigger threat to the long-run prosperity, safety and security of Australians or people around the world than climate change. But the economics of tackling climate change are far less significant. They're far less interesting. The stakes are actually low. We've watched our economy transition from DVD players to Netflix, from film cameras to digital cameras. We've watched our economy evolve from no internet to fridges on the internet. Those changes that I've seen in my lifetime have had a bigger impact on who employs who in Australia. The idea that moving away from 50-year-old coal-fired power stations to wind turbines is a fundamental economic challenge is absurd. You know, the Victorian government's about to spend $10 billion on one road.
Yeah.
You know, and every year, you know, we spend more renovating kitchens than we do investing in renewable energy. So, yes, tackling climate change is a very big political challenge. Yes, the science says we really have to hurry up and do it. The policies announced by Labor recently kicked us along that path in a significant way. But I think we all have to get a reality check, and that is that far less than 1% of Australians work in coal mining, and renewable energy will never employ more than 1% of the economy. The other 98% of us just don't work in green jobs or brown jobs. The other 98% of us just have jobs. and the vast majority of our jobs is just not going to be affected by whether it comes from old steam engines or new batteries.
And also, I mean, the problem with the energy transformation is not economic, it's not engineering, it's political. Mm-hmm. The politicians have got involved and they've frankly made an enormous mess of it, and they've made an enormous deal out of something that didn't have to be a big deal and wasn't difficult to start with. And rather than harp on about it and, you know, carry on about it, they should just get out of the way and let it happen.
Looking at you, Tony Abbott.
To address that, Labor did announce a Just Transitions Authority as part of, restructuring coal workers who might lose their jobs as we make the transition. What is the role of the government when we see big disruptions like this?
Yeah, look, while transitioning away from coal won't have a big effect on the national economy, it'll have a huge impact on the thousands of people that work in coal mines and the people that live in regions near them. Just like shutting down the car industry had a huge impact on car workers.
And coal-fired power stations.
And coal-fired power stations. When Jeff Kennett privatised electricity in the 90s, around 10,000 people lost their job in the Latrobe Valley. No one blamed climate change for that. It was an act of policy that saw around 10,000 people lose their jobs up there. When the Campbell Newman government was elected in Queensland, it sacked around 13,000 public servants. This was devastating for those people. Free trade agreements have had enormous impact on industries, not just cars, but like the textile industry that literally employed tens of thousands of women, often in regional areas in Victoria. They all lost their jobs. So transitioning away from coal, like transitioning away from car production or textile production, can have a devastating impact on individuals and communities, and we should always take those transitions very seriously. Labor's announced a Just Transition Authority to make sure that's better done for the coal industry than it was for the car industry, and that should be applauded. But at the same time, we shouldn't pretend for a minute that people are losing their jobs out there because a call centre's gone offshore or because a state government sacked some people. We need to help them through transitions as well. As a society, we just need to be nicer to people when they become unemployed. We need to invest in their retraining and support them, whether it's because of climate policy, trade policy, or just bad luck.
So frankly, the single most important thing about energy and climate policy right now is to have one. The single most important thing about energy and climate policy is to have one.
That's been episode 31 of Follow the Money, brought to you by the Australia Institute. It was recorded on the 29th of November 2018 in Canberra with Matt Grudnoff and Richard Dennis. You can go to our website at tai.org.au for the latest polling showing the overwhelming public support for a carbon price. And you can read more analysis on Australia's Paris climate commitment and our Climate of the Nation survey on our website too. Listen free to Follow the Money wherever you download your favourite podcast, or you can listen online at our website. I would recommend episode 24 on Gas and Coal Watch, which is about the power stations that break down in the heat. We've got a lot more episodes looking at nuclear power and the energy debates that you can look at too. Stay tuned. We'll be releasing more specials for those long road trips over summer as part of our summer special series, recorded at our popular Politics in the Pub sessions here in Canberra. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double N double T. Matt Grudnoff is Matt Grudnoff with a double T in Matt and a double F in Grudnoff. And Richard Dennis is at RDNS_TAI. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy, with additional editing by Lizzie Jack and Andrea Cantle. Our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum. You can find more of his music at pulseandthrum.com. Thanks for listening.